Sounds good.
All right. Episode 41 of the Red Team Podcast. In this time, without Dan. Dan is doing stuff somewhere. But I do have a guest, and someone has been here already twice, and someone that we are always glad to have on board, Dr. Mark Mateski. Welcome back to the show.
Oh, thank you. It's great to be here.
Yeah, and I figure since you've been lately posting some really awesome stuff on the Red Team Journal, it'll be good to talk about that a little bit, maybe towards the end, touch something that has been on my mind for a while, the four elements of red teaming. That, by the way, several people mentioned, looks like the OODA loop, and it's pretty true. I mean, it's based on that, only applied specifically to red teaming. So, Mark, what's in your mind?
Well, let me think. It's been, I think we probably all go through this where we have cycles of doing the same old thing and then some new idea hits us and then we're off and running again. And that kind of happened to me this summer. I started reading about safety, and once I started getting into it, I just would read, I'd get more books and I'd read more and more, because I think there's a lot of interesting stuff going on in the world of safety. And they've broken some ground that I think the red teaming community needs to follow. It needs to follow their pattern, because they went from looking at safety failures, especially catastrophic safety failures, in terms of, you know, like an airline crashing or a train wreck, in terms of the proximate cause, that you'd go backwards until you found the broken part. And then you could, that was the cause. You could point at that and say, well, the part broke because of this. It was poor maintenance, or it was made in a, it was faulty when it was made. And so, you know, problem solved, right? We find and we fix. And that's, in some ways, I think, where the security industry still is. We go back till we find the broken part, the broken software, the broken configuration, and then we fix it and we're done. But the safety world has kind of gone, I think, probably last 30, 40 years. There were some key events like Three Mile Island and Chernobyl and the Challenger, later Columbia, that caused everybody in the safety world to start thinking a little differently. So they went from technical failures to people failures, and so human error became a big thing in the 80s and the 90s, and so they would start looking at human error as an analog to the technical failure. But then, especially with the Columbia accident report, they started looking at the organization, and so they started asking why questions. It came up a little bit with Challenger, but they started asking why questions. So Challenger has the O-ring issue, and Columbia has the foam striking the wing issue.
Right.
And so you could look at it strictly as a technical issue, but they started looking at the organization, at the hierarchy and how decisions were made, going upstream more. And Columbia Accident Investigation Board report is fascinating. I think it's considered, this is just my reading in the safety world, I'm not a safety expert, but it's considered to be watershed, because they really looked at that and said, wait a minute, we've got, sometimes they use the word it's going to escape me. I might open up my presentation that I did in October. But they have issues that are embedded in the organization that prevent good decision-making. And so that's, when I think of red teaming broadly defined, that's something that I think is fair game for maybe a new kind of red team to kind of follow that path that the safety world followed, to start looking more at the upstream issues. And that brings me full circle back to the infographic I posted in the article I posted on Red Team Journal this week, looking at different levels of red teaming, where level four would be an organizational assessment where you'd look upstream to look at maybe the disease and not just the symptoms. So level one being a strict technical assessment, looking for vulnerabilities. level two being an operational red team that has some freedom to go live and test the system. Level three being an analytical red team, more of a paper assessment, a risk kind of assessment where you're looking at all possible attacks that you can think of and comparing them. And then level four being that organizational assessment.
Yeah, and I think if I were to put the majority of people that are calling today red teaming, right? They're living in the level one, maybe level one and a half, where some of the people out there like you, like Matt, that we had, a bunch of people that we had on the show, and including us, we are three plus. I don't think anyone is going all the way to level four. That's the ideal, I think, because then you can really go deep into it.
Yes, I agree. And I felt like I went on there without a breath for a while. Yeah. So hopefully that all made sense. It's just been kind of packed in my head, and it's dribbling out on Red Team Journal now. And at the ArcticCon presentation in October up in Minnesota, I unfolded some of the ideas. And so I'm excited about it, and yet I don't know who wants to go there. I agree with you. In fact, I pulled it up here, that infographic I made. I called pen testing a level 1.5.
Right.
And so I think we're kind of sitting down in that area. Some people are doing level 3 kinds of things where they're approaching it more systematically. Very few that I'm trying to think. Maybe I can think of one example, maybe where somebody got into level 4. But when I think back over years of red teaming, most clients, I think, would be hesitant to let you start to broaden your mandate and have you look at those kinds of things.
Yeah,
very. The people that hire you to red team, do they want you pointing the finger back at them and saying, the real problem here is that you guys keep making poor decisions when it comes to security? It's in your culture to make these kinds of short-term decisions that lead to long-term harm. And what client wants to hire a red team to have them tell them, hey, wait a minute, the real problem is you?
It's the leadership, yeah. Leadership, yeah. And the policies and the way your company is structured, even could be the industry they belong to. Sometimes it's just the whole industry has been doing something for such a long time, they don't want to change it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just the way things are done. And those kinds of things, I think, are relatively untouchable compared to, let's fix our technical issues here.
Yeah, well, great.
One thing I think is important to remember, though, I think all four levels are necessary.
Of course.
You need to be doing all four. You can't just say, we're going to look at the leadership and we're going to leave the technical side alone. That's obviously not going to work. Although the opposite is what we do every day. We look at the technical side and we kind of leave the organizational side alone.
Yeah, but I wonder if it makes sense now that, technical red teaming, let's call it that way, right? Technical red teaming is so widespread, and it's going sometimes, but mostly it's not going. Mostly it's just falling short of, like, yeah, sure, I found a bunch of vulnerabilities, here's how to fix it, bye-bye, pay me the check, right?
Yeah.
I wonder if now people engaging in proper red teaming, or at least they're trying to really mimic an adversary or really provide that higher level of awareness to the leadership to be able to make the right decisions at the right time. I wonder if we, and I mean all the red teaming community, we should really start at the top instead of going all technical. Yeah, I'll touch your network, I'll touch your cameras, your security guards, I even do your policies. No, forget all that. Even before that, just I wonder if we need to sit with the leadership of the organization, understand their ideas, understand what they want to do in the future, understand where they're coming from, and then begin to see that way, right? There was a great question on the last episode. I can't remember who asked that, whether we ever red team the culture of the organization we're trying to red team. The answer at the time was yes, but now listening to you, I wonder if that person was actually asking about what we're talking right now.
Maybe. It sounds like they might have been, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the example I gave at the time was because of the kind of culture we saw in one company, it was very easy to create a little bit of pseudo negativity within a specific team, and that grew to the point where we can kind of social engineer our way inside because of that negativity. So we exploited the culture in a way to let us in. But now that I'm listening to this holistic or more cultural base or idea base or kind of going to all the way to the top, to even the foundation of an organization, the base, right? I wonder if the culture actually do makes a ton of sense. Just learn it, understand who does what within the organization, understand the ideas, who founded it, what changed over the last decades, 20 years, and what are they going in the future? And like you said, what is their decision-making paradigm, right? Is it based on what? And I wonder, once you understand that, then you can really begin to cascade down from a level 4 to a level 3, because now it makes sense, and from a level 3 to a level 2. And then for finally, okay, now it's time to really go deep into the technical stuff, because we really understand what's going on.
And that, I think that's a great point. You now are red teaming in context, where before
exactly
it was more or less context independent. But let me throw one more thing out there too, that from an organizational assessment perspective, and this comes from the safety world too, these aren't my ideas, I'm just kind of borrowing and porting them over. But there's this whole idea that's come about in the last 20 or so years in the safety world that people aren't simply sources of error, they are adaptive. And so sometimes their adaptations are positive, sometimes they're negative. But looking at the person as a variable in the system from the bottom to the top reveals a lot of interesting things, including, and they use the terms sharp end and blunt end, where sharp end is the frontline worker and blunt end is the back office manager. But there's a certain logic at each level, and the logic can be different. So if you're front end and you're working a day-to-day problem, you have certain pressures and you have a context within which you're making your own decisions, and they make sense at that level. At the back office blunt end level, at maybe higher in the hierarchy, they have certain pressures and certain decisions that they're making, but oftentimes those pressures flow downward. And so at the sharp end, you have efficiency maybe as a value at the higher management levels, profit, efficiency, and that puts pressure then on the people making day-to-day decisions that can, I think that's what you're talking about, perhaps to a certain extent when you use social engineering to exploit a culture, somebody at the sharp end maybe is propping a door open that they shouldn't because there's so much pressure on them to get the job done in time that they prop that door open and move back and forth, and then you exploit that as a red teamer. You just come in the back door. But until you could red team that, say that door has to be closed and you need to put an alarm on it so security knows when it's open. And but that's a symptom of a disease that's going to manifest itself in other ways. If pressure is on the frontline workers every day, it's just maybe that door's closed now, but it's going to manifest itself in other ways. So we can go around patching all those things and making recommendations as a context-free red team, but until we get at that kind of context, I think the disease will still be there. And maybe that's
no.
It makes come total, back again and again.
Yeah, it makes total sense. So imagine this. You know, this is just I don't know. I'm just thinking out loud right now. But imagine that you have a company that was stood up, in the 1800s, right? And they wrote a bunch of policies regarding ways of behavior within the organization, policies about what employees are allowed and not allowed to do, how managers need to, behave and get, with their direct reports, right? And in the 1800s, the mindset was totally different from what it is today. And imagine those policies are untouched by and large since then. Right, so now you have ways of doing things that have no touch with the reality that it is today. Right, where you have like small startups or even larger high-tech corporations essentially run bottom-up, right? The employees are allowed to do and explore and things in a way that was unheard in the beginning of, even in the beginning of the 21st century, right? So I wonder if a company that has that, and I can name a few, I'm not going to name them, but I can name a few, just large, you know, multinational that have been acquiring more and more little companies. I wonder if that has, you know, that opens that door from the top, you know, from really, really from the top. That kind of faulty, not faulty, maybe it wasn't faulty at the time, but it is faulty maybe now. Maybe that faulty policy allows or enables bad actors to do their things, right?
Yeah, no, I could absolutely see that as part of the context. And you kind of, if you take extreme examples of maybe a hierarchical, rigid, very bureaucratic organization that's set in its ways versus a highly adaptive, bottom-up kind of organization, and you send a red team into the two organizations context-free, and they simply look for vulnerabilities, I think those red team reports are, they're going to be limited in application and utility if they ignore the context.
Absolutely.
So
yep.
You take those kinds of extreme examples, and I think it should be apparent that we need to be thinking upstream a little more than we do. And it's not always, you know, bad versus good. It's an organization is working within its own environment, within its own context, trying to find the best way forward within a complex trade space. So they'll make some decisions that are positive and that have some negatives attached and so on. And depending on the context, their own sort of evolutionary environment, they're trying to do their best too. But it's going to be pluses and minuses for just about any organization. And if the red team goes in context-free without any knowledge of those, I just think we're continuing to patch and work on symptoms instead of getting at diseases.
Right. The thing is, and this is, you know, this is something we've done with Dan in the past, where we've said no to a potential project or a potential customer solely based on what we learn from open source intelligence collection, right? So, you know, okay. The customer approached us, hey, this is what we need to do, we have this fear, blah blah blah, so okay, give us a week just to kind of figure it out. And then that week we did our own kind of open source reconnaissance, and we realized, you know what, we are getting ourselves into a big nasty pile of, you know, of shit, if you will, right? Because of the culture, because of who they are, because of the amount of lawsuits they have in the past, because of how the leadership really wasn't really recognizing their own faults. And I'm like, you know what, even if we do our thing and we're going to be successful, we're going to present the findings, and they're just going to deny it, right? So there's no point. It's going to be a waste of time and a waste of money, yeah. Right? Now, like you said, you're going without a context, and that's going to happen. And let's take it to the extreme now, right? Let's go and say, hey, now I'm a red teamer. I'm considering your organization because you approached me. Cool. Now, this is going to be a 6-month exercise. The first month, you and your key leaders are gonna teach us who you are. You're going to show us how you do things. We're going to understand how leadership in your organization works, who are the key people and the key products, if this, you know, a product organization, what are the outputs or whatever you do. And once we understand that, once we understand the organization as a whole, how it works, cool. And then the second and third month, we're going to look at your policies, we're going to look at your planning, we're going to look at your business continuity, we're going to look at who you are for the customers, right? Or for the people you're serving. And then the last 3 months, or the last 2 months maybe, then we're going to actually do what you think red teaming is.
You know, what's interesting, I think that's a great idea, but what's interesting, those first 2-3 months, they may be the same people, but you need a different skill set for that. You
Absolutely.
Need boundary spanners. You may even bring in somebody who understands organizational communication or psychology, or it's not your offensive security certifications that are going to serve you well there. But that's where it seems like there is push. Well, I don't know if it's pushback, but when you're dealing with level 1 and 1.5, those kind of certifications are necessary, arguably, but the skills they represent are the skills you're using there. You start moving up the ladder, it's a different skill set. And so is the red teaming community willing to say, hey, there are some other skills here that we need that aren't strictly technical skills? And I haven't seen the community as a whole really being open to that. I don't know. What's your experience?
Well, so many times we've done, we touch a subject, right? In one of the episodes, I can't remember, I'll put it in the notes once I find it, but we talk about the building a red team. And one of the things we mentioned is the team, we separated a team into two, a team that actually goes into the field and does all kind of things, and then a team that stays back and provides support. And within that team, we provided the need for a psychologist, we provided the need for a physicist, we provided the need for people that were not necessarily computer whiz, so physical security experts, but they have the know-how of how generally systems work, how the human psyche work, how things interact with each other within a closed system or an open system. I mean, personally, in my old team, I had this biologist, right? It was a professor of biology, and we will bring the guy at different points and different stages on of the engagement, just to understand how things were connecting to each other in cases we were missing something. And he provided us a whole different picture of what we thought their system would look like, right? So my experience is yes, absolutely yes, we need that. The question is whether this is something, you know, technical red teamers or the offensive red teamers are willing to accept.
I think you're the exception rather than the rule.
Yep, maybe.
Unfortunately, I wish there were more recognition out there that I think that you could almost call it a technical mafia, a red teaming technical mafia, that's what red teaming is. And that's really, Red Team Journal's been around, you know, for 20 plus years now, saying it's more than that.
Yep.
That you do need everything you just described. And maybe not for every engagement. Maybe you want, the customer says, I just want a level one red team. Great. But you should at least be able to talk and say, but there is, are you sure that's what you want? In the sense of there is more, maybe downstream, maybe phase two. But I don't even think most red teams that I've encountered are out there saying, you know, there are other aspects of red teaming here that they just do what they do, and and maybe from a market perspective, that's great because they do it and they get paid and they move on and they do some good. I'm not saying they don't.
Absolutely. I mean, it is any kind of adversarial assessment in any case, you know, whether it's a totally offensive technical engagement or a physical security engagement or even a social based engagement is good, right? The question is, how do we train ourselves, and, you know, by ourselves, I mean all the red teaming community, how do we train ourselves to say, okay, I am good on level one, maybe level two, and I need to recognize that if I want to continue to grow within my career, within my expertise, I'm going to have to either study or bring on board people that are actually comfortable with level three or level four, and they can introduce me to that, and eventually I get there. Right.
Yeah.
I wonder, you know, well, you know, there are a bunch of really, you know, you could say certifications, right? There's a lot of offensive certifications out there. They're by and large okay, whatever. I don't believe in certifications, but some of the, if you're brand new, they teach you methodology. They teach you some ways of doing things. I mean, they're good. They're fine, right? However, I wonder if, you know, and we touched this the last time you were here, I think it was episode 22 or 21, about having a proper red teaming conference, which, of course, never went anywhere because every time I ask people, I'm like, oh, well, we have DEF CON and Red Hat. And I'm like, well, no, that's not what we're trying to do here. And they don't get it, right?
Yeah.
But I wonder if it's time maybe for not just, you know, not just private organizations, but maybe universities coming and saying, hey, you're studying security here, right? And information security, we're going to attach, during the information security undergrad, whatever, we're going to attach also a bunch of skills you're going to need if you're going to go red teaming, right? And yeah. start building from there the basis of, yeah, red teaming is not just running a bunch of tools and trying to write exploits and potentially, you know, just breaking into a building, right? It's much, much more than that. And I you know, this is what... That's what prompted me to bring you back in here right now. It's all the last two posts you make on Red Team Journal. They set in motion in my head, like, okay, a different way of thinking. And you know me, I'm all about operational red teaming. I like to go and do things. I'm not so much in the theory or thinking forward like you are doing right now, but more like, oh, let's go do it. But lately, everything points to the fact that I am reaching out the point where I need to stop and learn to continue to grow. And this is exactly what I saw in the last two posts you made there. And I, you know, highly recommend everyone go read redteamjournals.com. It'll set your mind straight into what you need to do. The question is now, how do we do it? I wanted to touch the four elements of red teaming, and I'm seeing right now no need to touch that, because that stays on the level 2, maybe 2.5, based on what we're talking here, which is okay. And if you're going that route, I recommend that you read the four elements, because it'll set you a really nice methodology of how to go through everything and don't miss anything. But I'm not going to talk about it because it makes no sense right now. All right.
Okay. Well, one thing I think you can do, and this is easy. I don't know. It needs to be in a... I'm probably overusing the word context, but depending on your mandate as a red team, but right. You can talk to your customer, your client, about maybe asking just one question. Why? So we have a flaw here that we've uncovered. Instead of just saying, let's patch it, the find and fix kind of mentality, just ask why. Why does this flaw exist? Is there another reason? Is there an upstream reason for this symptom? And that might, just simply asking why, I think can get us thinking slightly differently. The other thing, let me just throw a couple of books out there that have influenced me a lot in the last couple of months. And one is by Sidney Decker. It's D-E-K-K-E-R, and it's called Drift into Failure. And it's a 2011 book about how complex systems fail, why they fail from a safety perspective. It's probably my top recommended book. If I were independently wealthy, I'd just have copies and I'd hand them out, because it's a great book in terms of understanding the broader system and where the thinking has come from or where it's going in the safety world. And the second one that I really, really enjoyed was by Tompkins, and it's called Apollo, Challenger, and Columbia. Apollo, Challenger, Columbia, The Decline of the Space Program. And Tompkins worked as an organizational communications guy back during the Apollo program. They brought him in, and he got to see how NASA worked back then. And then he, moving forward, it compares that to Challenger and Columbia and how things changed and why they changed and how organizational communication changed. And I think there's just so much in there that red teamers who want to move to level 3 and level 4, especially level 4, can learn from. So those, there are other books, but those two, boy, those are just, for me, they changed my worldview.
Fantastic. I'm going to put them on the notes on this episode and on as well on the website. So if you can do me a big, big favor, email me those titles, because I don't want to butcher their names or anything.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah,
no.
I'll put them in the notes for everyone. I was looking for things to read on the upcoming winter, so that sounds like a great place to start. I was going to recommend everyone to also read two things that are being that I've been playing with, I've been lately going back to the world of threat modeling for a simple reason that I'm trying to see whether. Not the traditional way of doing threat modeling, with, you know, where you put like borders and try to see, you know, borders of trust and all that stuff. And one thing crosses and you call out the threat there and all that stuff. No, a simplified version that there's going to be a post soon about it, but a simplified version of threat modeling, whether you can begin to potentially level 3 and level 4, you can begin to look at the picture by just creating a very simple model with the moving parts or the assets, as I call them, and things that can happen to those assets either by applying bad things or by denying them good things. And I mean, lately I've been having a lot of really success understanding the whole picture of something just by doing that exercise. And more and more I'm thinking I should write something about it, kind of give a good example of fictitious organization for whatever. And it's been giving me a high level of success even in past projects where I know what we did, how we did it, and I'm still in touch with their leaders. I ask for permission. I run this against them and against their current and different leadership than what it was, let's say, 5 or 10 years ago. And the pictures emerge and things that I should have done 10 years ago and I didn't do because I wasn't aware. And now I'm like, oh, you know what? Let me call them. Hey, you have the report from back then. These are things that are not technical that you need to address pronto, because otherwise you're going to have a big problem, right? And again, I'm trying to plug it in into the conversation we had, because I'm now realizing I was doing this because, I mean, subconsciously, I think, you know, we think alike in a lot of things, Mark. Consciously, I'm thinking, yeah, maybe it's next time. It's time for me to move up, right? Trying to understand the whole picture downstream. So more to follow on that.
I'd love to read it.
I'm being excited now.
I'm interested. Yeah,
I'm being encouraged to write it. So good. This conversation, you know, is going in a good place. The other thing I was going to mention is two books. One, we touched it in the past. But one is Team of Teams by General McChrystal.
Yeah, I agree.
Right. He begins the book by talking about how things were done back in the day in a factory where things were very complicated and not complex. And how do you deal with that complications, right? And then move to what complexity is, the difference between complicated and complex, and how do you fix that? And then moving towards the issues that they have back in Iraq and Al-Qaeda, and how, you know, the organization he was lead at the time, JSOC, was having a problem dealing with terrorists that were completely decentralized, that have, you know, no centralized command, no centralized way of doing things. They were highly complex, right? And this idea of Team of Teams came up, and if you follow it during the book, you begin to see how he's somewhat applying what you just talk about, Mark, about understanding what's going on downstream, understand the top, the level 4, and then going down to solve the problem, right? And it's an awesome book, highly recommended. The second one is the follow-up book.
I haven't read it yet.
Yeah,
I do want to read it.
It's amazing. It's amazing. The problem with the first book was people didn't know how to apply it, right? Mm-hmm. With the second book, they give you a RAM book, if you will, on how to apply Team of Teams. Both of them highly, highly recommended, especially if you're thinking about going level 3, level 4, and now that I have those concepts in my mind, I'm not going to stop talking about them. So General McChrystal, Team of Teams, and the second one, I think it's called One Team, I believe, or something like that. I'll put them as well in the...
Okay. I've seen it out there, and I haven't picked it up yet, but I will now.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, it took me 2 days to read. I couldn't put it down. It's great. It's great. Again, super easy to read. No weird concepts, no weird lingo. It's really out there for everyone. Technical and non-technical alike. So.
Interesting. That makes me, just to circle back just a little bit, the book on Apollo, Challenger, and Columbia, it makes me think of one of the reasons Apollo worked so well was it's been too long since I've read it, but I think it was the Marshall Space Flight Center where, I may be mixing this up now, but Wernher von Braun was, and the organizational communication he put into place called the, I think it was the Monday Notes, handwritten, well, on paper, right. Pre-email, they rolled up, and they were one page, they rolled up to him, and people talked honestly about the issues they were having, then he would write in the margins, notes, and send them back out to everyone, so everybody got to see what everybody was dealing with, and Tompkins at least felt in that book that was one of their keys to success, and it makes me think of Team of Teams, because
exactly.
That was,
yeah.
When I read that, I remember thinking, oh, this is kind of an approach to knowledge management. How do you share, how do you break down those barriers to knowledge hoarding, and how do you get knowledge spread throughout the organization so everybody's seeing what everybody else is seeing and appreciates it? So it's interesting how all these things all work together.
Yeah, it's
and if we could get there as red teams, I think we would be solving bigger problems more rapidly. But you know, that's the rub. But I will definitely pick up his second book.
Yep,
it sounds fascinating.
I usually make mandatory read three books that I think in the past couple of years those books are becoming more and more important not just as red teamers but as organizations worldwide tend to become more bottoms up, you know, so much top bottom, right?
Yeah.
And in order of reading, I would recommend reading Team of Teams as the first book. Second, I would recommend reading The Mission, The Men, and Me, by Blaber, as a former Delta commander in Afghanistan. Amazing book on leadership, amazing book on how to deal with teams and how to deal with problems. Right, and the third one is Jocko Willink's book, Extreme Ownership. Not just because of, you know, sure, you have to own it, and you have to own everything in your world, but the way he talks about decentralized command and disseminating the information to the right way, so everyone is responsible for their own worlds. Right, it makes total sense. So if you read it that way, you read it. Team of Teams, The Mission, The Men, and Me, and then Extreme Ownership. I think it'll set up your mind in the right way, right?
Yeah, that's interesting, because in Apollo, there was this concept of automatic responsibility.
Yep.
If you touch the problem, you own the problem, and you fix the problem. If you don't have all the knowledge you need, you go find the person who helps you fix the problem.
Yep.
And it makes me think as well, because one of the, I remember finishing McChrystal's book and writing in the back that this is through my lens, it was all about knowledge management and mission command, or Auftragstaktik. it really was about, for me, that's kind of what I read when I read that, and I thought that's all those concepts, they're dealing with complex systems, and how does an organization adapt? You can't hold, in today's world, that old model, the Taylorism, the managerial way we approach things in the 50s, it made sense then, but it doesn't make sense now. But mission command makes a lot of sense in this new world. Have you read, I'm just curious, Don Vandergriff's book, Mission Command?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. A long time ago, but maybe I should retake it again.
So it's just another good one, I think, in that whole vein.
Yeah, I think it was on the Red Team list of books that we published jointly, I think.
Is it time to do that again?
Maybe, yeah. Maybe it's a good time, yeah. Let's
talk to Matt again. I know we did a three-way, all three sites last time. It may be time to do that again.
Yeah, and we should have you and Matt together when Dan comes back in a few days.
That'd be fun.
Yeah, we have Matt. We had a great conversation with him two or three episodes back, and it was great. It will be amazing to have the three of you here and just chat, just flow ideas and see where it goes, right?
Yeah, I think that'd be a lot of fun. We should absolutely do that.
Awesome, awesome. We'll figure it out with you and him. Cool. We're reaching out the 40 minutes. You know, I want to apologize to everyone for the sound maybe on this one. I'm recording not in our usual space with not our usual equipment. But I'll clean it up the best I can. The conversation is great with Mark. And I hope you have questions. And please send them. And, you know, we'll try to answer them as much as we can. And speaking of that, Mark, if people want to get in touch with you or come read what you're doing or any updates that you want to give, now is the time.
Oh, well, you can always reach me through Red Team Journal, and I'll be posting some new stuff this week. I sent you that infographic on Eastern and Western thinking.
That was amazing.
I'm gonna be posting that probably this week. I used to teach an online course called Dragon at Night, and I'm thinking of bringing it back. And so that's one of the reasons I built that infographic. But anybody who's read Red Team Journal for a while will recognize some of the themes.
Yeah, I know. That's great. And if you bring back that course, man, count me in because I'm there.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Yeah, sometime in the next week or two, I'll post the infographic sooner than that, but then I'll have an announcement on bringing the course back as well.
Yeah, I'll link into the blog. Again, guys, go redteamsjournal.com. It's a lot of, I mean, not just the last few posts, which I think are some of the best Marks have put out there, but generally speaking, go back, go into the archives. It goes back to 1997, and you're gonna see all these, you know, nuggets of knowledge that are gonna start percolating, and then you're gonna make a whole new picture of what Red Teaming is. I mean, that Mark is the reason I opened my own blog back in I think it was 2007 2008. Because I thought, you know, here we have someone that has been speaking and has been, giving me a ton of knowledge, and maybe I wanna do the same with on the operational side of the house, which as we have seen in the last 40 minutes, maybe now it's time to move to a better place and start maybe writing about level 3 and see if we can come up with something cool. I mean, you've been doing that level 3 and almost level 4 for, like I said, from 1997. So,
yeah, that level 3 is where I'm most comfortable, yeah, and where I've spent most of my time. Level 4, I think, is an exciting new frontier.
Good.
For Red Teamers.
All right, let's see if we can make it. Cool. Mark, thanks so much for coming again.
No, thank you. Yeah. It's always a great conversation.
I mean, I can sit here and talk for another 3 hours, and I'm sure we'll come up with new topics to talk about. But let's save it for that conversation with Matt and Dan when he comes back. And yeah, cool, guys. Thanks so much for listening. Send questions, feedback, provide feedback in iTunes and other places. We're trying to make this better every time. We're trying to come up with better ways to transfer knowledge to you. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes we have amazing guests and they make the podcast for us, like today. Sometimes it's just Dan and me and we're trying. Sometimes it's just me, sometimes it's just Dan. Give us feedback, what works, what doesn't work, and we'll change it. We're not gonna get angry if you tell us we suck, so send it. And yeah, cool. That was episode 41, and I'll be out in the interwebs in a few hours. Bye, Mark. Thanks so much.
Thank you.